Okay, good evening everyone, welcome back. So we're moving on to our fifth shiur in the series. The first one we talked about the philosophy of kashrut, the second one we talked about vegetarianism. In the third shiur we talked about the basic ideas of basar and halab, meat and dairy. And last week we talked at length about tevilat kelim, about the mitzvah from the Torah of immersing utensils in a mikveh. We talked about all the details and the different appliances nowadays, how to relate to them, and so on and so forth. Today, I want to move on to a slightly contentious topic, and the topic of general topic of hechsherim. I think this is an important topic because I think people may not fully understand what a hechsher does and when a hechsher is needed, and for what purposes are hechshers granted, hechsherim granted. So, I want to first give a general introduction about the concept of hechsherim, and then we're going to go on to bishul akum and patakum. Bishul akum means things which are cooked by non-Jews, and patakum are things which are baked by non-Jews. Okay, that's the difference between the two. Bishul is to cook something, typically in liquids, and patakum is to bake something dry. And we'll see there are some restrictions on these types of things, and we have to go into that. But before we do that, we have to first, the basics, we have to first understand what a hechsher is all about and the default status of foods. So let's see, number one on the sheet. Rambam says, there are some food items that are hachamim prohibited, even though there is no biblical basis for this prohibition. Nevertheless, our sages prohibited these foods in order to prevent Jews from mingling with non-Jews socially so they'll not come to intermarry with them. Says Rambam, there are certain types of foods. Let's say you got a piece of meat. The meat has been slaughtered correctly. It's from a kosher animal, of course. It's been slaughtered correctly by a person who knows and a person who's kasher. The blood has been extracted. Everything has been done. The pots are kasher pots. Everything is fine from the Torah's perspective. You can now ask your non-Jewish maid at home to go and cook the food. However, there are some things Chachamim said, even if the whole process has been fine. Or, let's take a different example. Not meat, something which is naturally kasher. Something like potatoes, vegetables, something like that. And you go and give it to somebody to cook for you, then that may be a problem. Wheat, something which grows on the ground. There's no kashrut problem with that. Nonetheless, if a non-Jew bakes that food for you, then there may be a problem, which we're going to see. But these we have to understand, unlike the whole shiur of last week, which we were focusing on something which was a mitzvah midoraita from the Torah. That was tevilat kelim, which we talked at length about what type of utensils that our basis was a mitzvah from the Torah. Today, our basis is a mitzvah midrabanan. This is a rabbinic enactment, and the Rambam says the reason is of intermarriage. That's what Rambam says the reason
so
is.
If you're 75 years old, happily married, grandchildren, then it should not be prohibited.
Can't make differences.
So, that's a basic. You know, Chachamim's gezerot always comprehensive, Jerry. You're right. The problem is, if everyone wants to think like you, then nobody will do anything because everyone say it doesn't.
Everybody make himself an exception.
Exactly.
Young women, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That's true. Very true. And so that's how it goes. You know, we always look at the comprehensive gezerah rather than each specific. That's what Rambam says. But then there's another reason given in Nachonim, and that is that he may feed us something non-kosher due to his lack of sensitivity, right? So whilst he's cooking the food, because not Jewish, doesn't fully appreciate what it means kashur to you, right? There are some non-Jews who have been working with Jewish people for many years, and they know, you know, they know how careful you have to be. But not all non-Jews are aware of this. And, you know, you may ask him or her to cook something for you, and they may not be familiar. They may have just finished their sandwich, and they haven't washed their hands, their pork sandwich, and they're eating it. They may put some food in, has a shell, and something can happen. These are the two reasons given. What's the difference between these two reasons? A Jew who is not religious, can he cook for you? Can all the things we're going to talk about today, which you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do for you, can you ask a Jew who is not religious to do for you? So for example, meat. Meat is a typical example. Meat has to be cooked by a Jew. Even if you've gone through the whole process, and the utensils are all kasher, Right? It's in your home. You have a kosher pot. Everything's kosher. The meat is the best hechsher. Everything's perfect. A non-Jew goes and cooks that meat now. It switches the, it ignites the fire and switches it on. That meat now becomes non-kosher and you can't eat it. Okay? Right? That's what we're talking about tonight. That's what be sure. Because it's been cooked by a non-Jew, right? It can no longer be used anymore. So we're going to talk about that. It's not so simple as that. We'll talk about that. Yeah? But I'm saying if we cooked it from beginning to end, there's a problem. But what happens if you have someone who is cooking for you, ask him, he's not religious at all. He's Jewish, but he's not religious. So again, it'll depend on these two reasons. According to the Rambam, the whole problem is intermarriages with a non-Jew. A Jew, even if he's not religious or observant, end of the day, there's no prohibition in marrying a Jew who's not observant. It depends what type of lifestyle you want to live. There's nothing wrong with it. And therefore, according to the Rambam, wouldn't be a problem. However, according to the reason given that due to the lack of sensitivity towards these issues, then he may not be so careful when he's cooking for you, and now it equally applied to an irreligious Jew. Havadah has a long teshuvah about this in Abi Omer, and his conclusion is that meikar hadin, one can rely and one can employ Jews who are not religious at all to ignite the fire and in the mornings to go around switching it on. There's no problem with that. Meikar, he says, nonetheless, in order to fulfill the opinions, if possible, it's good to have a religious Jew do it. And therefore, this is the policy of many kashrut agencies across the world. They try to get someone who is religious in order to fulfill all the opinions. But mikar hadin, if a person's at home and a person has a relative who is not so religious and you can't cook, you want to ask him to cook for you, then there's plenty to rely on, that it's fine. The main prohibition we're talking about is asking a non-Jew to cook for you, and that's the issue. Now, before we get into the details, I've written here number 3, do we need to have shown everything? And this is a topic I want to spend a bit of time on, because this is something which isn't fully understood, I think, by people, and it's important we understand this fully. Okay? So, if I give it to them. So, what does a heksher do? When do you need a heksher? You have to understand, many people are brought up thinking that everything is non-kosher until you see a kosher stamp, until you have a heksher on it. And the truth is, the absolute opposite is true. Almost everything is kosher. You think about it. A vast majority of foods are kosher. Yeah? You see, that's, apart from the major things of meat, poultry, fish, right? Everything out of these three things, where the Torah clearly says, we have the simanim of what types of animals are kosher or not kosher. So that we know. We have, poultry has to be certain birds and has to be shechita properly. Fish has to be certain things. Apart from that, everything is kosher, really. So the things that I'm going to say is 4 main things. They are wine, cheese, milk and eggs. These are things which have problems, and that we're going to discuss next week. Cheese, we're going to talk about cheese and wine and these types of things next week. But aside from these types of things, everything else basically is kosher. Okay? So what's the problem? The problem is that today, because foods are ultra-processed, there are all types of flavorings and all types of oils used and all types of different ingredients and flavors which you don't necessarily know where they've come from, and very often they're extracted from forbidden things. So lots of sweets, for example. Sweets have flavorings from a beetle. Cochineal, it's called. Right? A type of beetle. Many of the Skittles, I think, used to have it. Now they kasher the Skittles, but they used to have, there was a problem with it in the past. Right? And the problem with flavor is that even if we say that you can do bitul is 1 in 60, so even if you want to say, but flavor doesn't apply. When something is put into, something is given flavor to taste, that's not batel. It never becomes batel. There's serious problems here. But, when you have all the ingredients in front of you, and you are living in a country in which you can rely and trust on the ingredients given to you, and England and America are definitely examples where you can. Elsewhere in Europe, I would say as well, but you have to know each country. Spain, I'm not sure about. But countries like France and Germany, where the ingredients mean the ingredients that are there. If a person goes through all the ingredients and he knows every single ingredient, what they are, and he can tell you that this is kasher for sure, there is no problem in eating that without any heksher. In fact, okay, and I want you to understand this. You know, the KLBD, you know, they bring out these, what's it called, the food guide, yeah? They bring out a food guide, right? Now, some of the foods, the minority of the foods have a logo on them, KLBD logo. The vast majority have no logo, but still they write it's kasher. What does that mean? That simply means they've been through the ingredients and they know it's kasher. They have no contact with the manufacturers. They have no idea what's happening in the 100%. Yeah, 100%. They have no. If it hasn't got a logo on it, that if it's got a logo, then that what it means is they have a contract with the company that they know they can go in and they know exactly what's happening, what's being manufactured. If it hasn't got a logo, all it means is they've been through the ingredients, they know where the ingredients are, and there is no problem with the ingredients. Are you going to tell me, perhaps, I'll take the question in a second, are you going to tell me, perhaps, on the same line, they're producing hazir, or something like that? First, it's highly, highly unlikely to my big companies, extremely unlikely, especially with the, you know, the health and safety and all the cleanliness today. And secondly, even if it's true, even if there was Chas V'Shalom, it's not there to give flavor. Therefore, be batel in 60. So therefore, look, if you can get a logo, and the LBD, what they do is they try to do that, is they try to make a contract with the manufacturers. What that contract is that if you make any changes, you have to notify us. That's all that logo is giving, right? And that means that's a far higher level of kashrut, because I know 100% there's no problem. Even if it's got no logo and it's got the and you know it's in the guide, it's written kasher, what that means is that the ingredients have been through one by one and there's no problem with it.
But suppose it's not in the guide and you've seen the
same thing. If it's it's the same thing. If you understand kashrut and you know ingredients and you go through the ingredients, all the ingredients are fine, there is no problem with it, provided there's no issue we're gonna discuss tonight of bishulakum and patakum. So that's the segue into what we're going to be discussing this evening. Because even if all the ingredients are kasher, and you've established that it's all fine, but if there's been cooking involved, or there's been baking involved, then you can have an issue, even if the utensils it was baked and cooked in are fine. And today we have to understand that, you know, we're not, it's highly unlikely that things are being produced in the same production line. Just like you people buy orange juice, right, from Asda or Orange from Tesco, there's no kashrut on those, right? There's no hechsher, nobody's been in. The answer's very simple, because the ingredients are very clear. It's 100% orange juice. Aye, perhaps on that orange juice, perhaps they were squeezing grapes, exactly. No, we don't have to take them. And even if they were, it's butter, right? Lots of smoothies today, if you look at them, lots of them, it's a substitute for sugar now, what they're doing, because it's cheaper than using sugar, they use grape juice. So lots of these Asda smoothies, if you have a look at them, right, the Asda have these smoothies, right, they've got in them grape juice, right? So all the greens are fine, but there's grape juice. But there's other ones with a whole bunch of fruit and vegetables, that's fine. Yeah, because you don't have to assume they are producing on the same line, and even if they are, it's better. Yes? Yeah? Who said they weren't kosher innocent drinks?
Yeah,
when did you hear that?
All of them.
When did you hear that? Innocent grape juice. Innocent smoothies.
Yeah, they were selling not kosher.
You heard that? Innocent. From the kashrut authorities.
So you have to know. I don't know exactly what happened there. Okay,
but
exactly. Probably. Well, you're telling me ones which had on ingredients who had no grape juice in it. They still said it's not. Okay. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I actually didn't know that. I thought the innocents were kosher, the ones without. I never heard of that. But I'm going to look into that for sure, 100%. But that's generally, that could be they knew specifically they were definitely using on the same production. Right? Maybe they went in and they saw there's a problem, and then they, you know, they notified the people, and that would really be a problem, because lechatchila we don't do bitul, right? If you know there's bitul going on, you don't do that. But if you don't know about it and it's happening, it's fine. Yeah. So that's going to be, that's really the introduction of what we're discussing tonight, because even when you have you know, all the greens are kasher and there's no problems at all, also nothing, you have to be very aware of vegetable oil. Vegetable oil, right? Very often, they actually using oils derived from fish. They don't have to say vegetable oils can mean oils derived from fish, and those can be non-kasher fish. So vegetable is a problem. Other oils are fine. Olive oil, sunflower oil, yes. And we're going to talk about this in 2 weeks' time, because in 2 weeks we're going to talk about cheese and wine, but in 3 weeks we're going to talk about vegan restaurants. And I'm going to say this now, because I know first time it's involved a bit in the kashrut to the bedin, is that vegan restaurants, yeah, where you think everything's fine, vegan, and have very high standards, everything, the person in charge of the kashrut actually found out that in the vegan restaurant, the breadcrumbs they were using had been immersed in pig fat.
How can it be vegan then?
Good question. They have to go and because they're being immersed, I don't know exactly, but that's something we're going to discuss with Hashem. The point is, and that's going to be a problem, that's for flavor, yeah, and that's not batel. So generally speaking, okay, that's another issue for sure, they're not checking the vegetables, but let's say you're using vegetables which don't need to be checked, yeah, again, so just that's important to understand the basis of what we're going to be discussing. So even when all the ingredients are fine, you have to always ensure that you don't have problems with bishul, akum, and patakum, which we're going to discuss now. Yes?
A lot of things just say flavorings. Is there a way to verify if they're fine?
No, if it's flavorings, then you've got a problem. You have to know what the flavorings are. Because that's flavorings, that's really...
Yeah.
That's not batel. If there's something there which is a problem, then the whole thing's not kasher.
How is it that the Bedin allows crisps?
So that's going to be discussed now. Bishul Akum, you're asking.
Yeah.
Okay, let's discuss it even. Okay, so now let's move on to Bishul Akum. Bishul Akum means any food which is cooked by a non-Jew, again, even if all the ingredients are kasher, is not allowed to be eaten by a Jew. And the reason is, again, like we said, intermarriage attracts people together and end up eating together. But however, that would mean that you can never eat anything cooked by a non-Jew. Therefore, Hachamim said, it only applies if you have two conditions. You need both conditions in order for it to be prohibited. Number one, the food has to be food which is fit to serve nobility, it's for royalty, only special people eat it, and in special dinners, we're going to talk about that. And secondly, it has to be, I didn't write both here, secondly, it has to be an item which couldn't have been eaten raw. Only if the item couldn't have been eaten raw, and the type of food which is eaten in special occasions, okay, only then is it subject to the prohibition of Bishul Akum. If it doesn't have both of those conditions, then one may cook. So for example, one may ask a non-Jew to cook a vegetable soup consisting of water, carrots, tomatoes, and these types of things. Because these are things, carrots and tomatoes, these are vegetables which could have been eaten raw already. Okay, water as well. The water of the soup, you could have drunk it without the goy. That's why you can ask the goy to make you a tea or to a coffee, right? Because the water, the primary ingredient is water, and the water is something which you could have drunk without the goy, and therefore, even if it does it for you, there's no problem at all. So that's condition number one, is that it couldn't have been eaten raw. And the rationale behind it is very simple. If it could have been eaten raw, then the advantage he's giving you by cooking for you isn't a great one, and therefore that's not going to bring kirub levavot, bring people together. Only when it's something substantial improvement, I couldn't have eaten it without the goy, and now he's helping me eat it, right? That falls under the prohibition. Items which are only eaten raw under extenuating circumstances. So for example, an egg you can eat raw, and we know Hazanim do this sometimes. We go down in Halakha in a number of places that Hazanim eat raw eggs. Yeah? Tastes good? Yeah? Yeah. But to improve their voice. Yeah? And theoretically it's possible to eat it, but nonetheless it isn't done in normal terms, therefore it doesn't... It's forbidden. And this all depends, of course, on the locality. And something very important which has come up over the last, I would say, 10... Ah, who said sushi? Over the last 10 years. This is why fish today is basically not subject to Bishul HaKum. If you go back 10, 15, 20 years ago, then salmon cooked by a non-Jew would be prohibited. Right? Even though it's a fish, and it's, you know what it is, the kosher utensils, but it's been cooked by a non-Jew, it's asur. However, today, because of sushimi and all these types of foods, where people are eating raw salmon, so it's now become the derech, it's now become the norm that these foods are eaten raw. Hence, there is no problem at all even asking the goy to cook it for you. Because the derech of England, I don't know about across the world, but definitely, you know, in different countries it may be different. Yeah, I don't know what happened in the rest of Europe. But with salmon, yes, for sure.
They have raw tuna, so even tuna.
Yeah, fish today, everything's being eaten raw today. Now it's become the derech that it's ne'echal chai, it's eaten raw,
meat
and
also,
therefore,
meat also.
Well, no, not I would say it's a specific form of eating the meat.
Chew the meat, very thin.
I understand,
and
but
even
it's
the minced meat. Vinegar, they eat even minced meat. They eat raw.
I don't know how. Look, the truth is, if this develops and becomes more and more common.
It's not common.
It's not. And I think it's only one form of eating it, right? I don't know. I think if it develops and becomes widespread, then true, things will change 100%. These halakhos are the most difficult to actually put down and define. These things can change from year to year, right? Because these halakhos depend on the locality where you are and the environment and what the norm is. If these are things which are eaten raw, there's no problem at all, right? And therefore, a fish wouldn't fall under that problem. Of course, you follow the majority of the people. People involved. Okay, so that's the condition of having to... you have to be able to eat it... you can't have been able to eat it raw. Yes, yeah? Quick point? Okay. Second point is, it has to be fit to serve royalty within a meal. So what does this mean? So, there's a famous story between the Chazon Ish and the Shimon Schwab. So Shimon Schwab was from England, from Gated actually, and he once visited the Chazon Ish in the 50s, the story goes, and Chazon Ish was upset. He said, hey, there's lots of people in Europe are eating canned sardines. Yeah, canned sardines. Of course, they're any extra, just sardines from the supermarket. And he said, there's going to be a problem of Bishul Akum. Why? So Shimon Schwab tried to answer back to him. He said that no. He said that actually this isn't going to be served in a royal banquet. So Chazon Ish said no. Chazon Ish understood, and this is the opinion of some poskim, the Aruch HaShulchan. Some poskim understand like this, that not fit for nobility has to be that kings and special people don't eat it. And the Chazon Ish response was that from what he heard, the kings of England, they eat sardines for breakfast. I don't know where he got that from, but that's what... and therefore for him, even though this wouldn't be served when there's a diplomatic meeting, it wouldn't be served, nonetheless, because they eat it, that's already enough. However, Rav Shimon Schwab responded to him, and this is what Hamo Vadia Paskins and most vast majority of Paskins, all Kashrut agencies rely on this, is that the Gemara says, Eino ole al shulhan melachim. It doesn't ascend the table of Melachim. Why did not say Al Shulchan Melech in singular? Shulchan Melachim means
banquets,
dinners, people enjoying each other's company. There you're never going to have canned sardines in a royal banquet when people are enjoying each other's presence and kings are in each other and special people are in each other's company. And therefore the criteria today really, this is what basically all kashrut agencies employ, is that it has to be something which would be served in a dinner. In a wedding, a special wedding, something like that. Something like that is considered Shulchan Melachim. If, however, it's something which even though wealthy people and even aristocratic people eat, but of their own accord and not in the company of others, that is excluded and that doesn't fall under the problem. And therefore, chickpeas, corn, snacks, cornflakes, popcorn, these are all types of things which are not eaten on the table of kings. And therefore these, again, providing all the ingredients are kasher. I don't have to say that every time, but it's obvious what we're saying. Providing all the greens are kasher, and one may ask a non-Jew to cook that for you. There's no issue in it, because it's something which is not served. According to this, canned food is not going to be served in a royal banquet. Okay? Canned food are things which are, you know, not special occasions. However, this is important to understand, it depends, and I'm going to talk about this when we get to tuna. Canned food, it depends, because if they cook the food before canning it, then already, at the time they're putting in the can, it's already become prohibited, because it's been cooked by the non-Jew. So I looked into John West, into their tuna, how they make the tuna. So how does John West make the tuna?
Tin it and then boil it, and then put in the...
No, they, incorrect. I also thought that, it's not true.
They steam the whole thing.
They first, they cook it. For 2 to 4 hours, they cook it first. Only then, they can it. After they can it, then they steam it, to ensure it's fully cooked. So there's two forms of cooking. Things like that...
So it's not... question.
I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it soon. But I'm just going to bring out the point, is that canned food, yes, that doesn't fall under Bishul HaKum, that's true. But it's only if you can ascertain that it was cooked...
first.
That it was not cooked before it was canned. If the cooking happened whilst it's canned, then that's fine, that's not going to be a problem, and that can be eaten. So you have to be careful about not all canned food, you can just say, ah, it's canned, therefore it's not royal, and therefore it can be cooked by... But definitely fruits, these types of things, in cans, these definitely things can be cooked by a non-Jew, no problem at all, because that's not Olah Shuhal Melachim, yeah?
But the problem with fish is gone.
I'm going to... Yes, that's what I'm going to say. I'll come to that. One more point, and I'll take questions. Now, a big discussion in the Ahronim is, what happens if you have a type of food which, in the current way it's been produced, is not something which is Olei Ashulhan Menachim, it's not something which is eaten with royalty, but it's a type of food which is eaten with royalty. Typical example, this is a question you asked before, crisps. So can you buy crisps, which are all kasher, all the ingredients are fine, can you buy crisps without a hechsher? So, it depends. Some are holding off their opinion and no, you can't. Why? Because even though crisps are not going to be on the royal banquet, but what are crisps? Potatoes. And baked potatoes and deliciously cooked potatoes are going to be served with royalty. And therefore, because potatoes are a type of food which is Olei Ashulhan Melachim, the variations of it are also subject, even if the specific variation is not Olei Ashulhan Melachim. However, the final halacha, and this is again what agents, kashrus agencies use, is that we look at each food specifically, by itself. True, a potato by itself cannot be baked by a non-Jew, cannot be cooked or baked by a non-Jew, a potato by itself, because the potato is something which is Olei Ashulhan Melachim, therefore that's a problem. And therfore you couldn't ask a non-Jew to bake you potatoes in the oven, or to cook you potatoes in the oven, on the stove, you couldn't do that. But, one second, but crisps, something like crisps, it's definitely not Olei Ashulhan Melachim, it's not fit for royalty, that would be no problem in asking a non-Jew, and using it. This is why crisps like Walkers, it's no problem with eating them, because the ingredients are fine, and there's no problem of Bishul HaKum. Of course, there are those who are going to be mahminot to eat them, okay, because of the problem of Bishul HaKum, that the opinions which hold us, since it's coming from a potato, and a potato is Olei Ashulhan Melachim, it's going to be a problem. Should we take questions now? Should we just continue? Yeah?
So, the whole idea over here is that we're doing what the culture is with
exactly.
The world, but with everything else, it seems to be that it doesn't matter what